Okay, we are starting to record. First, thank you very much for talking with us and taking the time. Can you just state your full name, please?
My full name's Thomas Rapule Modifi.
Thomas Modifi.
Yes.
Okay. And Thomas, we want to find out a little bit about you before we talk about your present situation. Where were you born?
I was born around here in Nepal.
In the Val.
Okay.
And where?
In Everton.
In Everton.
Yes.
Okay, so just down the road here.
Yes.
All right, and you've been here your whole life?
Yeah, yes, my whole life.
Your whole life. Okay, and when were you born? What year were you born?
1944, 15th March.
Okay. And I think you've probably sat in on some of the previous ones. We're going to ask some similar questions to you.
Yes.
What were your family doing? What were your parents doing when you were a kid, when you were a child?
Well, when my father was employed by then, it was a Robert Paints. My mother was just a housewife.
She was just a housewife. And do you have siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes.
How many brothers?
Five brothers and four girls. So we are all together nine.
Nine children.
Yes.
That's a large family.
Yeah.
And did you? What kind of house did you grow up in? With nine? With that's a very large family to be in one place.
Yep, that's a correct answer. So we used to, when we were from school, we used to go through the Indians, working there for part time when after school. So how we survived.
When you said, what, their businesses? At the
yeah,
businesses?
The businesses, yes.
What kind of work were you
doing? Well, we were scaling, but then we were using pounds and ounces. Okay, they were having a shop and they were smoothing. Okay. So we used to enjoy doing that, but for little money. And then for those little things which they gave us.
Okay, so and how was it? Tell us a little bit about your childhood. What kinds of things did you get up to when you were a child?
Well, when I was a child, we usually didn't have a luxury life like everybody. We used to eat, lousy food. We used to go and fetch water from far.
So you had no water in your home? No running water or anything like that?
No. There were wells by then.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And electricity?
No electricity.
Electricity.
Is this here in the Val?
Yes.
Is it Everton? Okay.
Yeah.
And school itself? What did you do well at school?
Yes, I did. Well, although it was tough, but I even reached to go and do my trick. By then, I was given the opportunity by these Indians, which we always helped, because there was our school. It was that Indian school in Pretoria. So we went there till we matriculated, and after that, the school closed down.
So was it a private school or a public school there?
No, it was a private school, Indian private school.
And your business friends paid for you to go there?
Yes, those people, yes.
Did you? Well, that's quite a long way from home, so did
yeah,
you
yeah,
board?
Yeah, well, yes, we were staying there.
You boarded there?
Yes.
Where in Pretoria?
What is Kilnerton?
Kilnerton,
yes, Kilnerton. It's between Bethel and Pretoria.
Okay. And did you think was that school considered to be better than the schools that were here locally?
No.
No?
No. We were missing our community because they were full of Indians and colors.
So we
didn't have that much freedom of ourselves.
You were the only black children there?
Yes, we were few.
And how were you treated in the school?
And I guess,
how did the other kids treat you?
Well, some, we got some kinds. Some treated us well, some badly. So we cooperated.
When you say badly, how?
They used to call us names. And what we want from, we left our community and we here in their community, you see. So you feel bad, anyway, especially when you're from away from home.
So you were there. You were there with brothers, and when you say we, who was we?
No, we the people. Peoples who were there by then. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were any of your brothers and sisters with you?
No, they were here. Yeah, they were schooling here.
So you were the only one that went from your family.
Yes.
Okay. Are you? Where are you along the nine? Are you the eldest, the youngest, in the middle?
I'm the eldest.
You're the eldest child.
Yes.
Okay.
How old is the youngest?
The youngest now. I think the youngest, he was born 1960 somewhere. That's the youngest.
Okay. And you finished high school there. You got me your matric.
Yes.
Okay, so what happened that when you finished matric?
And then from there, I wanted to further my studies. So there was no money by then. And at home, they couldn't afford. So those people also... And then I had to look for work and telling myself that after that I'll go back to school. Now I'll be here, no more there at that school. So it happened, by then it was influx control. Mm-hmm. Although he had a little bit of education. But now through influx control, you couldn't work where you want to.
So you came back home to Everton?
Yes.
And you were looking for work here?
Yes, and then I went to Joburg, and when you find a job, in a factory, they'll refer you to a contract or hotels. So I went for a hotel because I was looking for a living.
So you started working at a hotel?
Yeah, in a hotel, yes.
What were you doing in the hotel?
Well, I started washing dishes. And then from there, you know, you get promoted to by the foreman till I became a porter.
Okay.
See, when time changes.
What kind of hotel was it? Just
a night porter.
No, the hotel itself, where was it situated?
It was in Lange Hotel. It was situated in Corner, Kerk and Van Berg.
So it was downtown, in downtown Johannesburg?
Yes.
Okay. And how was it working there with when these were probably what, the 60s and 70s, huh?
Yes, 60s.
In the 60s?
70s, yes.
In the 70s.
Yes.
So what was it like being a porter at a hotel that I'm sure mostly had all white people coming to it?
It is.
Yeah?
So, all right, when you in between them, at times you feel inferior. Because most of the time even when you go and sit outside or enjoy meals, we are always separated. See, but coming to work, I will always.
Did you earn a decent living? Did you think you were earning, your wages?
Yeah, but by then there was no money. But the money the way you were earning, it was something for you because you were working.
And were you still living at home while you were doing this job?
Yes, I was still living at home.
Okay.
So helping with a little bit with it, I have for my brothers. Accidentally, I made a girl pregnant.
Okay.
So I had to look after her.
Did you get married to her?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Our firstborn was born 1964. 64, 63, if I'm not mistaken. And so then I must get married with a little bit of money.
And then did you move out of your, did you get your own place?
Yes, we had to. Because when you get married, you had the violent influx control. It makes you, we're an adult now. You must have your own permit. You must have your own family.
And did you move here in Everton? You just moved?
No, just in Everton, around there before there was this bouquet.
Okay. What kind of house were you?
It's a mud house. There's mud bricks.
Okay. All right. So, how long did you work at that hotel?
11 to 13 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Was there any unions at the hotel at that time? Was there anything like that in those days?
We didn't know those.
You didn't know anything. Okay. All right. And then, what made you leave that job?
Yeah, well, it was now. When they wanted to demolish the Langham Hotel, they were building Carlton Hotel. So now we had the opportunities, because when we were over 5 years to a company we worked for, so when we went to look for another job, the influence control gave you that access to get a job that you want. So that's why I left that hotel and I went to Cultonating. So I worked for Cultonating from then till 1977.
Okay.
Right.
As a porter, as the same, or did you do a different
job? No, it was a different job now, because now that was lighting.
Okay.
Unlike the food place.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and then from there, what happened from that?
Well, then from there, all this place was built. So they gave us houses by machinery. You had to get the house. So I had to have my house. Now I must leave my family. I must go now come and live with my wife. But luckily, my parents, when they moved in, they stayed near us, mm-hmm. So it wasn't stressful. Okay.
Okay.
So I kept working there till, because in Samango I went in 83.
So until 1983.
Yeah. So roughly I can say I worked till 82.
Okay.
At that place.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you get the job at Samancor?
Well, after leaving that, we were roaming around looking for jobs here. So unfortunately, I got luck and went into Samancor.
Okay. And by that time now, the union situation is changing, starting in the 1980s, yeah?
Yeah.
When had you been part of a union at all up until that point?
By that point, no. By then, 83, no, unions were, right, we were hearing about them, but when I arrived in Samango, there were no unions.
There were no unions.
There were only
there.
white unions.
Okay.
And just in terms of the kind of politics that was going on from the 1960s, I mean, late 68 up to 1970s, what were your impressions of those kinds of things?
Well, those were hard times. Well, we didn't know where you were heading. But unfortunately, things were changing. You could see life is no more like where you from to up to where you are now. See? So that was the changes. Although those riots and all those years, okay. So you could see that now something has changed.
And did you come into contact with any kind of political organizations before you started working at Samango?
We were. But now it was just here in locations. We didn't have to go out, you see.
Like what kind of organizations?
It was called civil people's organization.
Like a civic
organization.
And what kinds of issues were they taking up?
To speak of well, we just need to, yeah, thanks.
Okay. All right, for changing lives, and of changing, you know, when you change life, there must be a lot of things to be changed.
Right.
Okay. Transport and all those, playing fields. We couldn't play with whites. Okay. We couldn't play with Indians, but we schooled with them, we lived with them, but we couldn't have one organization to go and play for, you see? So that's the thing which was driving us. So now when things changed, we were happy, because we couldn't enter Rand Stadium when Highlands Park was playing, because we were black. See, it hurts.
Did you follow, you followed soccer quite closely?
Yeah, I was playing one.
You were playing?
Yes, I was a soccer artist.
Okay, what team did you play for?
I played for Real Supers.
What position?
I was playing 7, at times goalkeeping.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you ever think about becoming a full-time soccer player?
Yes, we did. I mean, that's everybody's
dream.
All boys said dreams when we went to stadiums and see those big teams. So we wished we could one day be there. And things were not the way you wished to.
Sure. Did you think that you were good enough to get that?
Yes. We were.
Okay.
Yes.
And what was your favorite big team? Who was your favorite?
In the white side, it was Highlands Park. Uh-huh. And then in the black squad, it was Orlando Pirates. Because there were only two clubs by then. It was Swallows and Pirates. And then in Natal, it was Amazulu and Bloemfontein Celtics. Those were the big clubs.
Okay. And do you still, I'm sure you still follow very closely. Are you still a Pirates fan?
Even now. Membership card, yes.
Ah, you remember of the fan club. Okay. All right. So when you started working at Samancor, 83, what did you do? What job specifically did you get in Samancor?
I started there. You know, when you arrived in Samancor, they will first interview and see what qualification you have. And some of the guys there, if you find that you've got more qualification than him, they're going to give you a rough job. You see? So we go to Chilu, there are times you find there on a notice board. I mean, everything it was written down when you arrived. So when there's an application, you do it. That's how we got some positions from down till the middle.
So where did you start? What job did you start with?
Oh, I was just a general worker.
Okay. Doing whatever was
whatever they tell you to do. Okay.
So when did the union start coming to Samancor?
I think it was 84, if I'm not mistaken. 84.
Yeah.
So there was a strike at 84, and then after that, when everybody went to campaign, so the union was strong by then.
So you joined the union?
Yes, we did.
Why? I mean, did you join it because everybody else was, or did you think it was going to? Why did you join it?
No, I joined it through that maybe things that will change through the union.
Okay.
But when times went on, we found that it wasn't as we thought that the union would work for us that way.
And that I'm assuming that when it first came, it was NUMSA, right?
Yeah, it was NUMSA. Yes.
And it's remained that way.
Yes, and we became, some people appointed us, I think I was a shop steward for 10 years then.
Okay, so what year did you start becoming a shop, where you voted as a shop steward?
I think from 87, from 85, 86, 87, somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you become a shop steward?
I was appointed by co-workers.
And why do you think that they wanted you as their shop steward?
Because I was brilliant.
Okay, you and what kinds of things did you do as when you became a shop steward? Just what?
How about we were representing people which were harassed by the foremen, by the then, you know, that white regime. Okay, I'm sorry to say, but it was a white regime. So some cases we won, some we lost. And then their shop stewards, you know, we went as high, some were higher than us.
Okay, and that was at a time when you became shop steward in the 86, 87.
Yes.
Where lots of things were going on in the country. KASATU had just been formed, 1985, and KASATU became very heavily involved in the politics of the country. How did you relate to the bigger politics of the union that was happening and all the struggles in the late 1980s?
Well, I did join some, like KASATU, at some rallies. Sometimes when I had time, or when I was off at work, I used to go there and listen. And at times we had meetings with them. As shop stewards, we met with them, some of the top guys there. Yes.
So what did you think of those, the politics of those top guys? You know, people like Cyril Ramaphosa and at the time and the UDF and all of those struggles? What was your approach?
Well, I mean, if we were in a bad situation, like we were, and you met people like them, you feel at times you nearly be free. Yet you're not free, and you wish to be near to them, or maybe work with them. So if that thing doesn't materialize, it gets.
And were you victimized at work for these kinds of things? I mean, what were the relationships with management?
Yeah, we were.
What happened?
At times they will tell you, well, when you make an application for such a position, they will ask you to stop being a substitute, and you will find that. So it was victimization then.
Okay. And sorry, just a parallel question. All during this time that you were working and you became a shop steward, how are things on the family side and on the personal side? How are things going with your children and your wife and at home?
Yeah, well, the family was also rising at my side, you see. So, right. At times, my wife didn't like it.
What didn't she like?
At times, I wasn't at home.
Okay.
We went out, we went to meetings. At times, you find when they strike somewhere, we go to go and support there. At times we heard that people were arrested. And now if she doesn't see you coming back, or the family seeing that you're not back, they're feeling miserable, you see, until they see you, or you must go.
Did you ever get in trouble with the authorities? Did you ever get arrested or beaten? Or?
Yeah, in Semenko, yes. We were several times. When we had the gatherings there, they used to call the police. We used to scatter because they were giving us dogs.
They're setting the dogs on.
Yeah. So, at times some of us managed to survive, not to be arrested. But some of us were arrested, and the union used to take them out from jail. You see.
Okay.
You were a shop steward for 10 years, right? In that time, what's the most memorable moment for you as a shop steward?
My memorable one, it was when we had the rally in Pal, in Cape Town. So with the guys of COSAT and, everybody from Devon, Port Elizabeth, that gathering of unions meeting COSAT, because COSAT by then it was mother body of every union. So when we were there, I think we were there for 2-3 weeks. So that's the...
What year was that?
Jeepers.
hard to remember those things.
Was it 1997, 1998, somewhere.
All right. So already after 1994.
Yeah.
So when things in the early 90s, things started to shift. Yeah, they unbanned the movements and Mandela's released and everything else. What was it like? Did things change at Semenko at all? Were things shifting? What was it like to be a shop steward when the bigger political things were starting to change?
Yeah, it wasn't so easy. Well, we enjoy it because now everything we could use the same canteens and all. Like, although it was tough.
So they dropped the color bar.
Yeah, they dropped it. But it wasn't easy to drop it because those guys, the thing is in their blood. You see. So it wasn't, even now, even when we left, some of them couldn't believe that we eating together in the canteen. We're sharing everything.
And how would they react to you coming into the canteen?
When you come to the canteen or in the toilet, when he meets you, he just looks at you, piece of wreck, So, well, we were used to such things. We didn't take them so seriously. But we knew that everything is changing, and it really changed.
And did you see, was there more confidence amongst black workers now when they're speaking to the white supervisors and so forth?
Not all. Not all. Because I think some they are not schooled. You see. So it's tough because at times you find that when they separately, they were still that on the bus.
And was there any changes after 94 in the management structures in terms of the racial composition of management or the attitude of management?
Yeah, the attitude changed, but slowly. You couldn't say it changed it fast, but it changed slowly. Although it changed, but it went slowly.
And what ways did it change?
Giving some people some higher positions, but it wasn't easy to reach the top because there was still favoritism there.
So when you obviously as a shop steward, you over those 10 years, and by the time that after 94, you had made your way up further. I understand at Samankh where there's a lot of different grading, A1, B1, B2, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So where did what grade did you got up to by that point?
Well, I went as far as becoming, because that was the time when I left to be a shop steward. They elected somebody. So I was relieved from this tough, because to be a shop steward is a tough job.
Tell us a little bit about the kinds of things you did as a shop steward, the tasks that you were given to carry out. In Samankh?
Yes, at times we went, they give us classes with these white guys. Yeah. So we went to a class, they give us like safety. When we went for safety, we went some with the guys, foremen and that. Still then, the attitude was not so good between us and them.
And talking about safety, all that time as your shop steward, Samankh is a very dangerous place to work.
Yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit about the safety situation there when you were working.
In that place, you can't mention because it is too tough. Even now, I remember that place, you know, it's from a pigsty. You know, when you can enter a pigsty, Samankh is a pigsty. It engendered our life, but we couldn't do otherwise because we were earning some living for our kids. But that place, with safety, safety was only on whites, but in blacks, they used to send the blacks workers in front where it's dangerous. They didn't go themselves.
Give us an example.
Like when you go to go and clean, or maybe the machine is stuck, they won't go there, the foreman won't go there, he will send you to go and check up what's wrong there. When the thing start moving, he's going there, and the management will say it's him, not you. So the whole credit goes to him, not to you.
And just in terms of like safety gear and stuff like that, would it be the same for blacks and whites?
By then, no. There was still a color bar there.
Give us examples.
They were wearing white dust coats. You can see differently. I mean, white what? Well, you were just given an overall safety head, safety group, but they would have safety gear.
And as a shop steward, did you ever have a campaign around safety?
No, there was safety representatives in the shop steward. So at times I was both high. As I mentioned earlier, because workers used to... So I used to work as a shop steward, and here, on the other side, being a safety rep.
And as a safety rep, what kind of work would you do?
Oh, well, you check every dangerous places, machinery that must be repaired, and where people are working. And we needed some changes there.
And were workers ever worried about exposure to chemicals?
Yes.
And were those kinds of concerns ever raised with management?
Yeah, there was.
And what happened?
I mean, we did, that's why I said when we wanted safety equipment, once we get the equipment, you will just be given something that you must go and work there and come out. So they can get the production. That's all they wanted. Nothing else. Your safety, that didn't mean anything to them.
Did your experience in Samankor, the English term, to radicalize you? It made you more aware of a lot of things that maybe you hadn't been aware of as a worker before?
Yep, some. Yes, I did.
Yeah? Mm. And you'd said previously that, you know, you joined the union, and earlier in the interview you said, but we found out later that the union wasn't... What? Tell us about what the union... I mean, you were a shop steward for NUMSA, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
So they were not reliable, right, in that way. Because if it wasn't them, we shouldn't be here by now. Okay, because, I mean, we went out from Samankor not knowing them, that is them. The shop steward with the union that we must leave the company. We heard it after.
And so when you say it was them, what do you mean, that they came
the,
to...
The higher shop stewards than us. Because they were top guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when we left, they were given the opportunity to open their own subs there inside. That's why we call them, that's why I said them and then we.
Okay. So are you trying to say that the union, as NUMSA, cut a deal with the management and left out some of the workers?
Some with the shop stewards, yeah. There's a deal between them, yes.
And so when you only found out about this afterwards?
Yeah, after we were...
Were you retrenched?
Yeah, yes.
And what was the reason? What was the reason given for your retrenchment?
Well, they said that they gave me a letter that I will work till February 19, 2001. So a reason, no reason was given.
And what did the union do?
Well, we went to the union. There's nothing they could do for us. So.
What did they say to you when you met with them?
Well, they said they too, they are also out. Not knowing that we are not retrenched. We were retrenched.
And how many of you at that time?
Well, I think the shop stewards which left, we left three of them then. So those were the top guys of the shop stewards.
But were there other just general workers retrenched at the same time?
Yes.
Yeah. We've talked to another worker who's very sick, who's dying, actually, it seems, from the manganese, as many other workers. When you were there, were you at all aware of any changes for you physically in the way you felt?
When you come with a sad story now, because now if you give this to me, you're saddening me.
Just tell us the story.
The story is this. I came there being a fresh...
Hold on. Let's start it. I've got 2 minutes on this day.
Okay, we'll change the... Just hold on just a minute. We'll change the...
Ready to...
Okay.
So where were we?
You were about to tell us, starting the story. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I became, every time, within a month, I would be coughing, going to doctors. And then to that extent, they tell me that I must go to the company doctor, that I'm always now sick. So now, to find out that really I was sick, I was now breathing heavily. At times, I couldn't sleep by then. And now the concentration now with my wife, it was also lowering, you see. So, but now the thing went up till I use those, you know, the pumps that the pumps. So now when I go to X-rays, they will say it's asthma, and they will change the, maybe I must check for TB. Yet even now, I'm still breathing heavy. So that place killed me.
And how long did it take before you started seeing that working at Samanco was affecting your health?
And let's see, it was after I left the company, about 6 months after that. I was now becoming, you know, I couldn't do those things which I was doing before. Like running to the bus, or taking a spade, doing my gardening. It was now heavy, becoming heavy for me. And then they took our medicals, so I had to do means of going to the doctor. So I went to clinics, and the other clinics, you don't get the same treatment as you go to the doctor. And now the thing worsened. It wasn't, because even when the airplane passes, when walking, I can't look up, I'll fall down. I can't, on this moment, I can't squat.
And tell us some of your symptoms, some of the things that are wrong.
Yeah, my head. I'm forgettable. I can look for my watch while it's on my hand. Right. Secondly, I'll just sleep. When I wake up, I want to see, recall what I was going to do. So these are things that are happening. So it's hard now.
And headaches?
Yes, I do. I do have. Knees. I must always now helping to rub them always, every night. I have to. At times you just sweat. See, even now, when I'm sitting and looking at you this way, I'm hot where I am. I could have took off my clothes. Because I'm hot now by where I am.
And when you were working at Samanco, did any other, well, before you were retrenched, were any other workers already starting to feel sick?
Yeah, they were. But now we couldn't. You know, we didn't know what's going on, what was eating us there. But people were sick there inside. But we couldn't see. And the doctors were in favor of Samanco with the management. When you go to a doctor for 3 days, it's too much.
What do you mean it's too much?
You go to have 1 day, 2 days. The third day you have to go back to work. And yet we still don't fit to go back to work. But the doctor will say, you're fit to go back to work.
And how often did you go and see the Samanco doctors?
Well, there were times of taking X-rays. Now, when you Samanco doctors, when you are under their medical scheme, every 3 months you must go and check the doctor. So when you don't have medical, you've got to change your medical to their Samanco medical, not yours. Because your doctor will give you some extra days. Samanco doctors will say, today you go in and consult him today, tomorrow you're going to go to work. And yet you will not fully recovered for what you went to him for.
So, when you were retrenched, since that was in 2001,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
So you had worked at Samanco for almost, 18 years?
Yeah.
What did you leave with when you were retrenched?
I'm just living an ordinary life.
No. I mean, what did you leave Samanco with, the package? What did they get? After 18 years of working there, what did you get?
They gave us, you know, these people, maybe. They gave me a tie.
A tie?
A tie, yes. Samanco is written Samanco tie. Nothing else.
You didn't get the retention package?
Nothing.
You didn't get anything payout? No payout?
No, payouts we did, but that was peanuts. I mean, even now, I'm not yet satisfied with Senegal. Because that money, we didn't get it straight. It came half. And we were taxed still on top of that.
So how much did they give you?
Roughly, I can say 70 to 80,000.
And how much of that was taxed?
About 9 to 11,000, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 11,000.
Alright, and they gave it to you in increments?
Yeah.
In little bits?
Yeah, in little bit. Yes, we didn't get it.
Alright, and they've given you all your money now?
Yes, now I can say yes, because Samango can't give me anything now. When I went there, they would say, I left little money, they would tell me you're mad.
When you were retrenched, how old were you at that point? That was 2001.
And 1 year, and how old I am now.
So you were born in 1944?
Yes.
That would have made you 57, right?
No.
No?
Come on.
44?
44, yes.
To 2000?
67 now.
And 44 plus 56 is 2000. This is 100. And if you're born in 2000, that made you 57. Now, that was 6 years ago. How old are you now? You should be, according to that, you should be 63 now.
No.
1944.
Yes.
2004. That's 60 years.
Yeah.
So you're 63 now.
Yes.
So 6 years ago, you were 57.
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
That was when you were retrenched, correct?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I just wanted to make sure.
No. Okay.
Yeah? Do you get it? Yeah?
Yeah,
am I right?
Yeah, no, you're
okay,
right.
Fine.
Okay,
fine.
Right.
So you were 57 when you were retrenched.
Yeah.
And what did you, when you were retrenched, what did you think you were going to, what did the future look like to you, I mean, at that point?
I mean, look at the scale that they promised that I will have when I leave the company. It wasn't that way. So it was heartbroken. So the thing that I wanted to come and do, I couldn't. It was now only that money to feed my kids, to school them.
And when you were retrenched, you only mentioned you had one kid before. Did you have another child?
Yes, I've got four now.
You have four children?
Yes.
And what are their ages?
They're already big.
They're already big. Okay. Did you think that at the age of 57, after being retrenched, that you might be able to get another job, or that you might be able to work somewhere else?
No, because before we left, they told us that now they will need new blood. Because even before we left, there was a company from Adveroid. It was from Japan. So they didn't hire age more than 35. Their minimum age was 37, downwards. So where would I be employed? Nowhere.
So when you came out and you got this package, you sort of accepted that was the end of your working life, that you are now officially sort of retired.
Yeah.
And your wife, what was she doing?
Well, she was working in the Checkers by then. Now, I don't know what job was she doing. Even now, she's still working there.
So she still has a job at Checkers?
Yes.
Is that what supports you now? Her job?
No, I support myself. Not that. She's doing her things, I'll do my things.
So you two have your separate lives?
Yes.
Oh, that's okay. That's very progressive.
Just asking you, when you left Samanco, while you were working there, you were paying into a pension scheme.
But when we left, it was under Provident Fund.
Under Provident Fund.
Yes.
And was that part of your payout, or do you collect money from it every month?
No, it was yearly. We had statements from them yearly. I mean, every year we'll have a statement that you had so much now
in the fund.
Yeah, in the fund, yes.
And when you left Samanco, Did you start collecting a pension, or
do you understand my question? I'm trying
to find out if you get any money from, apart from what they paid you out in terms of your package, do you get any money for like a pension?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Will you start getting when you're 65?
Yes.
Alright.
So now, because now I'm sick, I've already made about how many applications, I can't remember.
Alright. And they say until you're 65, you don't get it.
And they always want medical, and I always give them.
Alright.
What do you, just a few last questions. One thing we haven't really talked about, all during this period from the 90s, and then you were retrenched in 2001, and now these last years, as an ex-shop steward, a worker and everything, how do you think things have or have not changed in your community, where you've lived here, for people in general, not your just your own life, but just your friends, the people you know, the community here?
Yeah, all the community here, all I can say, even by then we didn't know anything about this environment, right, for this whole pollution stuff. Okay, although we already did school, but we didn't know that it materialized around us here. Now, seeing this, now it materialized everywhere here in the community. Community are suffering about it. Because when we went here, you can see everywhere. Houses here are roofed by asbestos. So you get what...
Most of them still have all the asbestos. Yes.
Unless someone who has changed the asbestos. Since the environment is still low.
And you've joined the Retrenched Workers Committee, yes?
Yes,
here.
Yes.
Just tell us just a brief thing about how it has been to try to get justice for what it is that, you know, the things that you think you deserve.
Well, it was hard to get help, because when we went, we were always together and wanting to go and fight some uncle. Yet when we comes there, we find that we got no strength to find them, till there were people who could help us. So the people who we could rely on. So that's why that made me to be brave. Even now I'm brave through them, although I haven't seen them.
Okay. And you're now almost at official retirement age. What do you see for the future for yourself and your family in the next while?
Yeah, well, not only my family, I mean the whole community.
Sure.
So I don't want them to suffer as we suffered with their parents, because things were not as they are now. Because now everything is going to change, but they're going to be changed by fighting. There's nothing that just comes around without fighting. So we're going to fight this pollution and all this stuff for clean water, and the promises that they gave us to clean everything. The environment must be clean, of course. So that's what I'm striving for. Oh, I can be given a chair to sit there and guide these youngsters.
As the elder statesman. Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to say that we haven't asked, we haven't talked about? Anything for yourself that you would just want to say?
You know, but, what I think, I think now, I think because now, yeah, I'm interviewed, and then, the most important thing I want to meet the guys is APF guys that helped us to be here where we are today. So that's my opinion.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Cheers. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.